Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A fine week for stocks, but the stimulus plan is on the rocks. NASDAQ hitting highs and the KRI indicator starting to flash a mild overheat condition. The U.S. dollar bouncing along the lows, and our guest today, Keith McCullough from HedgEye. All this and much more on episode number 674 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome again to another episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host. Yes, I am. And if you don't know, I've been doing this a long time. In fact, I've been doing this, I don't know if you know this, for those of you that maybe haven't been listening that long, but you know, it goes back to March of 2007. That's where it all began. And if you don't know about the beginnings of why we're doing this podcast, how this all started, a little history for you. Thought it'd be interesting for you to know that. So back in 2006, 2007, I was writing my first book, which is titled The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. It was about to be published. It was about to be put out on the market. And my publisher says to me, hey, I have a great idea. Why don't you start looking into maybe marketing the book through podcasts? And at the time, it was 2007, or a little bit before that, maybe even the end of 2006, I said, what is a podcast? So we looked into getting this started with some basic rigs and what it would take to do this, and then it just took off. You know, back then, there was a lot less competition out there. Not everybody had a podcast back then. And we started. We had some great guests. It took off. Create a lot of stir, excitement, and it's been a great run because not only do we have guests on to help you, the listeners, really understand what's going on, but when I have guests on, they teach me something all the time. And by the way, if you didn't know this either, you can still get copies, of course, of The Disciplined Investor. Best way to do it right now, audio. You get audiobook over on Audible, or there's a few other places that carry it, so you can get the Audible copy of The Disciplined Investor. Check it out. And kind of looking back as I was thinking, I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago. It seems like so long ago that this all started. But one thing I will tell you is that the opportunity to do this is just a wonderful experience. I really do feel like all of my listeners, you, are an extension of my family. And my wife says, what are you doing? What are you doing over this weekend? I say, well, I'm going to finish up a podcast at the office, and she says, well, can't you skip a week? I said, not really. I don't want to skip a week. I have so many things to talk about, so many guests to bring on, and a lot of people count on this each and every week to bring them some new ideas, some fresh insights into what's happening. So that's why we hardly missed an episode over the last 13 years or so. Because I wouldn't not do something for my family that I promised. And that's the same thing that goes here. You're my family. And in fact, I love hearing from you. So if you want to go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button and just send me a note, whether it's something you just want to say about the markets, a question that maybe we could read on the air that's on the tab over on the Disciplined Investor that says, Ask Andrew. Very easy to do that. Very easy. Now, you may be wondering, what is going on with the markets, right? I mean, a lot of people, I've gotten so many calls recently from people saying, like, listen, I don't get it. We see a 10%+ unemployment rate. We see these horrible numbers with regard to bankruptcies and just the economy's in shambles with no end in sight right now for when this is all going to come back. And, you know, are people going to go back to work? is their business going to be closed? Is it going to be, are they going to be replaced by robots? We talked about that on DH Unplugged this week, where robots, yes, robots are going to be replacing butchers in some places. And a listener sent me in that this is actually happening at Tyson right now. They're starting to think about this just like they did in Europe and a few places around the world, where they're just going to say, you know what? It can be just as efficient. I mean, here we have unions. It may be a little more difficult to break into that environment with regard to robotics to do this, but it's coming. So more displacement of jobs. So with all that, they're like, well, why are the markets going up? Why is the NASDAQ hitting all-time highs? Why was it green for the week again? And I mean, we know this. We've talked about this, that the mega caps are really leading the storm here. They are the party, whether it's the Amazons, the Apples, the Facebooks, which had a great week this week. We own that for our portfolios, for our clients. Whether it is, just the stimulus that's helping. I mean, really, that's what it is going on. I mean, Facebook, let's get back to that. What's going on with Facebook? The only thing that we can really discern is that as the White House is putting a clamp down or a ban on some firms like TikTok and WeChat, that really could be a beneficiary. The beneficiary of that could be Facebook. So they're essentially just getting rid of their competition in a few areas. But I also think we need to really understand that we have the motherlode, the massive motherlode of fiscal stimulus. And we've talked about this a lot. And some people are like, hey, Andrew, there he goes again. He's gonna be talking about the Fed and all that. Well, that is a major part of the market. The expectations for the Fed to stay on hold with their interest rates for an extended period of time, keep on flushing in liquidity into the markets, and the fiscal side, where we have a significant amount of money that's being pumped in through the fiscal stimulus, whether it's the Paycheck Protection Program, it's the Main Street Loan Lending Facility that's out there. But really, the salary replacement by the unemployment insurance, the extension of that from the Fed, the $600 a week, or whatever it's going to be in the future, that has really been very significantly focused on by market participants. The idea that we are replacing the drag on the economy with money, simply just money, being poured in from all sides. And now we're at a crossroad. Now the question is going to be, what are we going to see from stimulus moving forward? In other words, how much are we going to get and how are markets going to react? So I was reading some interesting note from JP Morgan just this week, and they line up four distinct set of expectations and potential outcomes on the next stimulus package, the fiscal stimulus package that now is being run through the system. So here's what they said, that if it's less than $1 trillion in the total package, it's going to be negative for risk assets, in other words, equities. If it's $1 to $1.5 trillion, which is basically expectation of what everybody thinks it's going to be, well, it's been pretty much priced in. Overall, it continues to see a slight trend higher for markets, as this is kind of what was expected, and it will really push a lot of money into the system. If it's $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion, which is slightly above expectations, we're going to continue to see a move higher with a slight boost to value positions. And this one I like. I like this one a lot, the last one. If it's greater than $2 trillion, they just write, watch out. Watch out. Because the markets are going to take that as another, not only a green light, but a flashing set of neon green lights as, wow, massive money being pushed into the system. Now, we don't know exactly what's going to come out of the sausage factory. It's in process. I am certain we're going to see something, whether it's going to be, a trillion, trillion and a half. The question is, what is the White House going to want? All right now, the latest thought is that the White House wants much less than what the Democrats are proposing at about $3.2 or $3.4 trillion of new stimulus. And make no mistake about this, there is a major and direct correlation and relationship between the amount of stimulus that's going to come out and what happens with equities. because by the very nature of the stimulus, a lot of that finds its way into risk assets. So we'll probably see something from, whether it's a cut down plan or some kind of an agreement, probably I would say over a weekend, whether it's this weekend or next weekend, I can't be sure. But they're probably going to announce it over the weekend. That's what they like to do. They like to come in with a surprise factor on a Monday. But it looks like there's the thought that something's definitely going to happen. And the idea that about $1.5 trillion, I don't know how we went from billions to trillions, but we're in the trillions and we seem to be staying there. So that's really going to be, I think, the major, I would say the next leg for the markets, either direction, is really what comes out of this particular stimulus package. If it falls short, I expect there's going to be a lot more volatility. If they come in above, I expect less volatility and a lot of rocket ships happening for names and expansion of valuations and PE ratios, et cetera, in a very significant manner. Because again, that we do know that has been driving. There was a direct correlation between the time that there was a stimulus plan announced in March and exactly what's happened with markets. People are not as worried. They're not having to use their savings necessarily because they're getting an enhancement from the government on top of their state unemployment, which just ran out, of course. The federal 600 just ran out this week, or at the end of last week, I guess, is better said. So there's going to be something there. And when we look at the dollar has also been directly crushed by all of this excess stimulus that's being entered into the markets by the Fed and by the Congress and the government. And that has had a direct impact on emerging markets and gold and metals and Bitcoin and everything else that goes along with a flush of liquidity in the market. So keep your eye on that. I think that's the most important thing we're going to look at. The KRI indicator, which we watch on a regular basis and all the time, is now at a +4. If you remember back when it was a +7, I was freaking out and telling everybody, hey, watch out. We're not there yet. We're not at that point yet. However, we're at a +4. So things are mildly overheated at this point. Something to think about. Okay, enough with that. Let's get to what we're getting to. I want to spend a little more time with our guest today because I think he has there's always a lot of wisdom to share and also pearls of wisdom, that nuggets of information that we could all use. So let's get right to that discussion. Bring him on in. And our guest today is Keith McCullough, founder and principal of HedgeEye, which is an educational offering and helping people understand the concepts of Wall Street and analysts and what they throw around and helping understand what they call the old Wall Street's cloak of obscurity to help you kind of find the right way to manage the risk in your investment portfolio. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did. That's actually one of the best characterizations I've ever heard of HedgeEye. So thanks for saying it that way. We are trying to educate people, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, this comes from a podcast that I've been doing. One of the OGs back in 2007, we started this. So we're not new to this whole podcast game. You know?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
So I want to talk about a few different things. And last time you were on was back in at the end of 2018, which is obviously too long of a time. But nonetheless, one of the things that I follow you on Twitter and follow your work, and I think it's really important to understand about the concept of a process. And you've really drilled that into the heads of your subscribers and people that follow you. And, you know, this is called the Disciplined Investor, so there's a process too. But I really want to focus in on, number one, what is a process? Number two, what's the importance of the whole thing, and how do you build one?
Yeah, and again, I appreciate that as well, because I think that if you at a bare minimum, you don't have a process and you don't evolve it, you don't stick to it, then you're really just kind of flailing around and chasing old wall headlines or talking points, and those are everywhere. I mean, they're in oversupply, suffice to say, so that can be risky on many levels. But what I try to do is, and I call it the full investing cycle process. So again, investing across the full investing cycle on two big factors, growth and inflation. Now, you can be long growth, you can be long inflation, you can be short inflation, or be positioned for deflation. and you can be, you know, positioned negatively for growth. Now, a lot of people don't think of those things as the thing that I think about. Like, I mean, for example, when you have growth decelerating, real growth, because inflation's rising, in a recession like you have right now, we have what we call, Andrew, economic stagflation. So that's the part of the full investing cycle that's really tricky for a lot of people. And they're like, wow, how can something like the NASDAQ go up because of that? Well, it's because you, all the cyclical growth and all the hopeful growth, all the growth that people thought they were going to have, isn't there. So people sell those stocks, the financials, the consumer cyclicals, hotel stocks, stuff like that. And they buy the growth that they can find. And, you know, that's exactly what's happened, you know, this year, is that you could have, or at least since June, you could have been long commodity inflation at the same time that you could be long treasuries, at the same time that you could be long the NASDAQ. And people are like, how does that all work together? So again, we backtested anything you could buy, which would include Bitcoin, anything that trades where I can measure and map volatility. And that's the key too. It's you know, I have a map on what I own, what I'd own in any part of the cycle, Andrew, but I don't just own it because that's what the map says. You know, I use my weather vane or my market signal, my trade trend tail signal, if you're familiar with that, to say, okay, look, the coast is clear. You know, I don't buy things, you know, just because theoretically I should own them during a certain part of the cycle. I'd like to have that, but if I have my volatility signal agreeing with that, then I'm more comfortable with that. So, and, you know, the two big parts of the process, again, the signal and then the cycle. And I think if you get the cycle right, you have a central tendency to get a lot of other things right.
So this goes right into the quads. You have, and quad four, you have four different cycles. I'm assuming we're kind of leaning right on the quad four at this point.
Well, we just came out of quad four is what we call it. So quad four is when you have, so again, it's a 2x2 model. So you have two factors, growth and inflation, and four economic outcomes. Quad one is when you have real economic growth. That's awesome. Inflation's falling, dollar's rising, real growth is happening. Quad two is when you have, you know, it's hot. Like even the Fed figures it out and starts raising rates. So that's quad two. That's when you have both growth and inflation accelerating on a real basis at the same time. That's a horrible environment for gold and treasuries, for example. That's why we were short those in 2017. Quad four is a shit show. Okay, so that's when you have both growth and inflation slowing at the same time. So pretty much everything goes down other than gold and treasuries and dollars. And then when you come out of that, you get a reflation, or in this case, a stagflation. So we're going from basically quad four, a deep quad four, a depression type quad four, you know, throughout the pandemic, into an economic stagflation, which we call that quad three. So that's when the dollar starts to go down again, and you get some reflation of the former deflation, or you get commodity prices to go up instead of collapsing to the downside.
So let me just kind of, for those of you that maybe are not following all this discussion we're having here, which, you know, if you really kind of spend a little time thinking about it, it makes a lot of sense, and it's pretty easy to understand. And that's the point of what Keith is also trying to do, right, Keith, and making it understandable to the masses, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the most important thing. That's why every morning on the macro show, I have multiple, you know, touch points where I teach it. It is like podcasts are, I think, you know, to your point, you're early on these. I mean, they're the fantastic, you know, communication tool for a conversation. But when it comes to a process, sometimes you need to see it visually. And it's so simple that I can teach it. I mean, and that's what I spend a lot of time doing.
Yeah, I hear you. So what's interesting, though, is the point here is that when we talk about process and we talk about where we are, that while you could be wrong about a certain stock or maybe a sector issue, at least you have a plan. I mean, I don't mean to kind of really overplay this point, but you got a plan. You have to have something, because I can't tell you how many people recently are like, I don't know what to do. I'm out of the market, or I'm fully in the market, and they just don't, you know what they're doing, where they're going. So that's, I think, an important thing. Talk about the risk range, the hedge eye risk range.
Yeah, the risk range is like the batter's box. I mean, yeah, the umpire's changed, so the strike zone changes, and that's another way to think about volatility. So when you have when volatility changes, say you got an umpire who's right hammered that night, and he's a little off, and all of a sudden the strike zone is all over the place. You're like, well, it doesn't matter that I don't like this umpire. You know, this is the strike zone we have, so I have to play the game with that strike zone. You know, similarly, or conversely, rather, you basically have an umpire who's on it. He's got a tight strike zone. You've studied the guy. You know where he likes to call strikes. You know, you got a low volatility situation, and you can play the game that way. So the risk range is very much that thing. Every single day I publish across many things, including most things that matter in macro, which include like gold, the 10-year yield, silver, you know, the NASDAQ, obviously, the FANG components, you know, across macro, currencies, the dollar, you know, I show a daily risk range. So that's the umpire that we have for today. And that's no matter what you like or don't like, it's mathematically derived. So like I say to my kids, like you get what you get, you don't get upset. And you sell at the top end of the range and you buy at the low end of the range. And that discipline, you talk about being a disciplined investor, I mean, that's the most important part of my process, because that takes out a lot of guesswork. It takes out, most importantly, the emotion. Like, I don't sell something because it feels like I should sell something. I don't feel anything. You know, again, it's like the most aseptic situation you can have. And I don't sell something because it's too expensive or buy something because it looks cheap. You know, all these things you'll hear on CNBC. You know, I sell it because it's up and I buy it because it's down. And it's at the low end of the range or it's at the top end of the range. And that's pretty much it.
You know what? You brought up the subject, so I'm going to go right into this. Okay. Can we talk for a minute about what we're seeing out there with regard to, first of all, well, I'll let you say it's nonsense or not, but the stuff we're seeing on like CNBC, like the halftime report, yeah, you got a giggle out of you. There you go. And then, but how investors react to it, because you could see, I won't name a particular quadrant of the screen that's being taken up about who's talking, but you could see somebody talking about, yeah, I really think this is an interesting play. And they have the stock tracking alongside of it. And as they're talking, it's moving, it's moving, it's moving. It's almost like the old days where you wanted to wait for the Kramer pop and then short it. You know?
Yeah.
What's the benefit, though? No, what's the benefit? I mean, you may say none, but seriously, what is the point of all this?
Well, it's just a sideshow. It's actually a fake show, right? I mean, they call that, I think they call it the investment committee. Like, yeah. These are people that wouldn't be on any legit investment committee, never mind combining them all to form one.
Okay.
So I mean, it's just garrulous ranting about nothing. I mean, again, they'll constantly talk about, you know, you'll have a couple guys with ponytails telling you how the stock, he likes the stock's valuation. Like, look, like these are just, you know, maybe when you and I started in the business, when people just got an internet connection, like it was interesting to talk about multiples of things because the internet would tell you what the stock's multiple was, and therefore you could call it expensive or cheap. But that really still doesn't tell you anything. There's no new information in that.
Right.
So I think
that's
funny.
That's the funniest thing. Great. No, it's interesting you mentioned that because number one, some of the players on that. What's really fascinating to me, they talk about the various stocks. Right? They're not going to talk about a mutual fund. I own this sector. You know, they talk about stocks, but yet for their clients, they don't do that. And that's number one. Number two, they spend an inordinate amount of time on this show, which requires a lot of prep, whether it's right or wrong. It does require a lot of prep, okay? And what are they doing as a chief investment officer for their firm? And then finally, the issue of, when you look at what they're talking about, they're all talking about two things. One, PE. The PE is really good. It's really low. It's really high compared to, but that's ridiculous, right? It's a one-sided. It's a one-dimensional look at something. The second thing they talk about, I don't understand this. I've tried. I'm a chartist. I get it. But they're constantly talking about the relative strength index. That's like it's like a disease that's spread with all the players that are on these shows. They talk about the relative strength index being above 70, so it's too hot. We think we're going to get out. I mean, I'm like, when did that become a really good tool for you? I don't understand it. Do you?
It's like understanding my fourth grader. I mean, I do understand what the subject matter that they're, it's trivial. I mean, these are trivial, you know, talking points. And that's really what I meant by being, you know, you don't want to be a garrulous person when it comes to speaking about things. Look, you know, people that haven't heard that word, look it up. And what you're going to find are people on CNBC. And that's what it is. I mean, they're talking about, like you said, valuation, 50-day moving monkeys and RSIs. Okay. Like, literally, I have four kids. I'm pretty sure even my four-year-old can figure that out.
You know,
if I told them where to look. So it doesn't, like, what we want to do is get people up to speed on how modern markets trade.
Yeah.
There's been negative evolution on CNBC. So people have really, and I feel like I'm the standard bearer of that baggage, because I have to retrain basically. Like, I take on rescue dogs all day long at Hedgeye because they have a bunch of CNDC baggage. So they think the world is one way, when in reality, the machine, which really drives the flow of the market now, is looking for other things. The market doesn't go up and down on valuation. Valuation is not a catalyst. You know, what is a catalyst is the rate of change of things, the rate of change of the volatility of the market, the rate of change of growth, rate of change of inflation, rate of change of the profit cycle. So again, these are the types of things that, you know, people should obviously be paying attention to, which are things that are actually causal and have, you know, they have some explanation to not only what is happening, but what could happen next. And that's the other big thing on CNBC, Fox, or whatever else. They're always talking about what happened in the rearview mirror, which is, again, useless.
Yeah, I mean, have you? I don't know if you're watching. I pick on Barron's a lot, you know. But Barron's has gone so far as to say, the you know, Apple stock went up because share prices were rising. I mean, that's like their headline. Seriously, it's like, huh? Yeah. Really? Okay. But let's talk a little bit about something, because there is a serious disconnect, and whether or not there needs to be a connection at all is a different discussion, which I'm going to ask you. There's a disconnect between the economy and the markets. A lot of people talking about, of course, the excessive amount of stimulus and markets clearly reacting, the algos and all that, to this. And, you know, the dollar heading lower, you know, I think it was at a low, multi-year low yesterday, or multi-month low yesterday. Gold and silver flying. Bitcoin getting a bid. Yield curve flat to not going anywhere, obviously. So, you know, we have that problem. Do we need to have a connection? Is this normal? Is this abnormal? I know it is what it is right now, which I hate saying, but what's going on?
Well, it absolutely is connected in a lot of ways to the economy. You know, and the problem is that that's not a good thing. And these are, you know, these are the things that make bubbles. So when you think about what they want to believe, which is, don't fight the Fed, this is all good. These people, you know, Fed fans, I'm talking about people, you know, people that want to socialize Fed bailouts of markets, socialize losses and capitalize their gains and be rich and all that. It's, you know, they didn't quite think it through in full, Andrew. And they didn't quite think it through in one specific way, which is the voting machine daily on what is happening in America, which is what's happening to the U.S. dollar. So what happens to the dollar? You know, normal human beings understand this. Wall Street and the Fed in particular has been basically willfully blind in explaining this very simple point. But most human beings that work hard understand that they're working hard for dollars. So when the dollars go down, the price of things that you buy in dollars go up. And that's the real problem right now, is that the purchasing power of the people is getting absolutely plowed. As the people that can afford to buy stocks and talk garrulously about stocks and gold and anything, literally anything that's priced in dollars. To your point, Bitcoin straight through the roof. I'm long that too. I'll buy anything that is inflating in dollars. I mean, but what it does is, the other side of that trade is that the people get plowed, and it's a real unfortunate thing. And I think it's going to be a really hard thing for the establishment and the government to explain in really economic terms, because what it's doing is it's perpetuating both inequality and the lack of a renewed jobs market. And these are where, you know, obviously and unfortunately a lot of human beings are going to have to face that unfortunate economic reality.
I mean, listen, all we have to do is look at Venezuela. Their dollar plummeted. Their stock market was up like, I don't know, some thousands of percent one particular year. And you're like, wow, what a great market.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the problem is that it's great until you have to actually spend your gains somewhere.
Yep.
Because, like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, gold's been making all-time highs against Argentine pesos and Venezuela's currency forever. You know, that's – so people got the joke, you know. And that's kind of the whole thing. It has become a joke, is that it hasn't – if you and I were talking in the 1960s, somebody like Henry Hazlitt would have the journalistic integrity to explain that daily on really the conflicted and compromised channels that we had a little brief discussion on. But, you know, that's not the game. You know, and that's what our chief demographer, Neil Howe, says. You know, he calls it the fourth turning. You know, generationally, most institutions, whether they be the media or the government or Wall Street, for that matter, old Wall Street, are run by the same generation of people that want the same thing to happen to their nest eggs, and they don't give a damn about the dollar. I mean, I've never heard Jamie Dimon, Ben Bernanke, pick anybody on CNBC, explain explicitly what burning the value of the hard-working currency people are paid in means to the people.
Yeah, no, that's, well, we try to accentuate the positive and sweep under the carpet the negative, right? Isn't that the whole way of doing things? Like, you know, if you have a great jobs number initial claims of you know, 1.1 million, wow, the best since the start of the pandemic.
Yeah,
that's, you got to go through that.
Pandemic, anything that was a 20% of that, half of that would have been a disaster, which, because it is a disaster.
So what about this? What about the other part of accentuating the positive, where we're seeing that it seems that most people are looking at headline numbers on things. So you, for example, you see a stock that has a 30-cent beat. I mean, the numbers coming out of companies versus analyst expectations are bizarre, right? Nobody's close to anything. And a company comes out with a number that they beat and their revenue is better and maybe they're guiding a little bit higher, or maybe they're guiding in line, whatever, compared to consensus. Always compared to consensus. But yet when you look and you dig down, you're like, wait a minute. A year ago, they were at 100, let's say $10 per share of earnings. Now they're at $4.20. Stock is near an all-time high. What am I missing? Yeah. Like, where is that?
You're not missing anything. I mean, a lot of people, that's the old wall game they play. They beat the beat versus miss. Of course, if everybody withdraws their guidance and then all the old wall analysts, who are generally the worst, you know, anyway, come up with a consensus that's too low, management's smart enough to beat that number. I mean, that's all it means. And we go back to the secret to the universe, which is calculus or the rate of change. And we look at it the way you explained it, which is, what is your year-over-year revenue growth? What is your year-over-year cash flow growth or earnings growth? And that's and really, actually, if you look at the, like, something like Apple or Amazon, like, they really deserve, like, in rate of change terms, the appreciation that they've had. I don't give a damn about their valuation. I truly don't. I mean, they are growth, and I want to be long growth, and I want to be short companies that can't grow, or sectors like the financials that can't grow. So they really did show rate of change accelerations during a pandemic period. So they proved to be anti-fragile, which is fantastic. But the other side of it, the banks, you know, earnings are down 33% year over year for the aggregate of the 66 financials in the S&P 500. And those things have been bloody dogs. So you do have, like, the market has differentiated between what is actually growing, Andrew, and what isn't. There are some interesting situations, obviously, all over the place where that doesn't apply. But I'm, you know, generally speaking, the market's been very good at putting premiums on growers and selling slowers.
So what's the outlook here from here? I mean, are we going to be able to see the continuation of the same trend, in your opinion? And how much of it is really dedicated to the fact that we have incredible amounts of stimulus that are holding a lot up? I mean, $600 a week for some people is nothing, for some people is a lot. But, you know, that's kind of an interesting situation if we're going to see that the government has entered into this new phase of, one, providing for, number two, they focus on the market, which is something we haven't seen in years to this extent. And the Fed, which Powell, when he came in, seemed to be a pretty level-headed guy and all that, he's turned into Bernanke Yellen.
Yeah, and so the answer to that question is, God willing, I got 2 feet on the floor every morning, two hands on my keyboard, and I just let the market tell me when the party's over.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be last to leave the party. I mean, and the answer on that is, like, if you're looking at the equity market in particular, I think when that party's over, gold's going to do even better. There are plenty of things that I'm long that have nothing to do with this bloody stock market discussion, but, you know, when the VIX shoots back above 31, I think is a pretty good rule, at least right now, that's what my model's saying, then the party's going to be ending quite quickly. And if it stays above that level and the government tries to do more and more of what they've already done and prove that that is indeed the definition of insanity, because you can't fix a leverage problem with more leverage or more printed money, then it could end. It's like all things at risk. You know, they happen slowly, then they happen all at once. So, you know, for me, that's what I'm watching for. I don't have the arrogance to tell you what day that's going to be, but I do have the, you know, humility to say I have a process that really, which is what we started the discussion with. My process really depends on embracing uncertainty and knowing that I don't know. Right. Well, my process knows when I see certain things.
That's the point. Tell us how to get in touch with you. We'll put it on the show notes for episode number, what do we got? 674 on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. But what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on Twitter sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, my Hedge Eye handle at Keith McCullough, and then HedgeEye.com is where we hang out too.
Got to ask you, last time we had specials. Any specials? Can we give something to listeners?
For sure. I just don't know what it is that Dan Holland's going to drum up with you guys.
This will we'll save this. We're going to put it on the show notes for this episode on what the special discount is for listeners. And, you know, I'm available to kind of crosstalk whenever you want, on your side, my side, whichever you want to do.
I really enjoyed it. Let's do this again sometime.
All right, buddy. Have a great day. Keep the feet on the ground. Quad forever.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
All right, bye. And that wraps the show. And by the way, I'll mention that over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, on the show notes for episode number 674, there are some specials. There's a special, you got to check it out, that HedgeEye is providing for listeners of The Disciplined Investor. So I think you get a number of days free of their service. So you need to check that out. Go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, a little bit of a shorter show this week, but until next week, I bid you adieu and wish you all the best things. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged on Tuesday evenings, where myself and John C. Dvorak get together and talk about all sorts of matters related to and unrelated to the markets and finance and the economy and money in general. Also, mention that the Monday Q&A, the pop-up webinars that we're doing, still on. You can register over for that as well on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks for joining me this week, and I will see you again soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.